It is Tuesday, March the 5th, 2013. I am Steve Groeck, the webmaster of www.gerweck.net, Groeck.net, your source on the World Wide Web for all your pro wrestling news since 1997. And today's guest we first interviewed in 2005, shortly after his WWE departure. He was one of the most requested guests, and we've been getting a lot of requests for this gentleman to come back to the website. He is a six-time WWE Tag Team Champion, a former ECW Champion, a star in TNA, and he's currently with Ring of Honor Wrestling. Today I give you Matt Hardy. How you doing today, Matt?
Very good, Steve. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. And as I said, you are definitely one of our most requested guests, and it's a pleasure to talk to you again today. As I said, the 2005 interview we did with you on the hotline is still available up at Gerweck.net. Check out Matt's profile on our website. And I guess the first question would be, Matt, you know, you've been in the ring, you've been in with the big companies. Obviously, you've worked a lot of matches in your career. How you doing physically? How's the body holding up?
Physically, right now, I'm doing pretty good. You know, obviously, I am only working one or two days at a maximum on the weekends now. And I took about a year off just to get everything together for myself personally, just to make sure I could be happy and healthy and get my body and mind in the right frame. But I feel good. I've had three non-invasive surgeries, which helped break up bone spurs in my lower back and hips, which was my biggest issue, which just kept me in pain basically every day. Kind of made it hard to get out of bed every day for a while. But I had those things addressed. I'm delving into DDP yoga right now to hopefully break up the scar tissue in my back and hips and neck and whatnot, because I lack a lot of flexibility because of that. But you know, those issues aside, actually pretty good. You know, the shoulders don't ache so much, the knees don't ache so much, and I feel all right. And I'm really enjoying wrestling on an easier schedule right now. It reminds me of why I found a passion for this business in the first place, because now I'm doing it as more of a love as opposed to having to do it for a job or a payday. So it's really rewarding now. It's funny. What's old is new again. I really am passionate, and I love performing in front of audiences, even if they're smaller and more intimate.
That's awesome. And I was just telling Matt offline, today is the 12th anniversary of Matt and Jeff, the Hardy Boys, winning the WWF Tag Team Championship from the Dudley Boys on Raw. Milestone, obviously, in your career, a six-time WWF Tag Team Champion. Now, obviously, Matt, you've won so many titles. You, of course, won the European Championship, the Hardcore Championship, the Cruiserweight Championship, United States Heavyweight Championship. Of course, you were the ECW Champion for a while. I guess just kind of looking back in general, is there any one title that really sticks out as like a special reign or special run with a championship?
Well, the first thing that really stands out is the first time we won the World Tag Team titles in 1999. You know, Jeff and I, our dream as kids were to one day make it to the WWE, and all we wanted to do was become the tag team champions one time. And once we did that, we really achieved like what our lifelong dream was as kids. You know, and we felt like anything we were going to do past that was extra credit. So, you know, that was very special. You know, once again, that was just really the culmination of two kids from a very small rural town in North Carolina that had a population of less than 200 when we were born, you know, achieving their dreams. So to do that on that level at such a young age was really amazing and overwhelming. And we just felt so blessed to be able to do that then. And everything we accomplished past that was just like, you know, kind of icing on the cake. So that stands out as my, you know, emotionally my favorite title win. The ECW title was also something I was very proud of, just because, you know, like I was the guy that was representing the brand at that time. And, you know, still in many ways, when you're the champion of a promotion, it's almost like they give you the, you know, the Oscar or the Academy Award for that promotion. You're kind of doing the best job, and they kind of let you carry the promotion as being the guy that's running the show for a little bit. So that was a big honor as well, and to me that was very sentimental, and I really am very appreciative of having that opportunity to be the ECW champion in WWE.
I think kind of the annals of tag team wrestling, you and Jeff really stick out. I think you guys were a great tag team, and obviously looking back at that period, of course there was Edge and Christian, there were the Dudley Boys. That was a great period, I think, for tag team wrestling. And, of course, going back to the 80s, you know, with WWF at that time, with the Killer Bees and the Hart Foundation and the Demolition, the Rougeos, there were a lot of great tag teams. I just kind of, just in general, we don't really see a lot of great tag teams today. And I guess the emphasis is more on, I guess the mentality from Vince has always been that, you know, tag teams don't draw money, that the individual stars make the money, the individual matches make the money. I guess what's your thoughts, just kind of reflecting back on tag team wrestling and where it's come from and where it's going? Did you kind of see maybe in the future we'll see more tag teams push in the promotions, or do you think that the day of, you know, teams staying together for long periods of time have kind of passed us by?
You know, it's funny. I get this question quite obviously. Yeah, I obviously get this question quite a bit because we were in that period of, you know, the tag team renaissance there in the late 90s. But you know, looking back at it, you know, there was a great era of tag team wrestling in the late 80s. You know, the Hart Foundation, British Bulldogs, like I said, Rujos, all those teams, Rockers were brainbusters that were around during that era. And to me, I think the issue was, at that time, their top guy, which was Hulk Hogan, was red hot, you know, the last half of the 80s. They were selling out every venue, every arena they went to. They were doing big business. And I think their top of the card was taken care of, with Hulk Hogan being the guy that was setting record numbers for the company. In the late 90s, you had Stone Cold, you had The Rock, you had DX. All those guys were red hot. It was the Attitude Era. It was the Monday Night War era. And wrestling was so hot again. Everything, we were so blessed once again. Every event we went on for the first couple of years was sold out. We were doing 20,000 people a night, every night. You know, two kids that had just came basically from, you know, working indie shows to the big time. You know, we're on the road doing, you know, 10 days straight, and every night was sold out, 20,000 people. But looking back in hindsight, I really think that the main focus for a WWE machine, for a Vince McMahon, now a Triple H, is that whoever their main star is, their main draw, they want that guy to be red hot. They want that to be taking care of business as far as selling out venues, whatever the numbers need to equate to, whether it's TV or pay-per-view, they're doing the best they can possibly be doing there. And until they get that, I think they're going to focus on finding that guy that can do that business for them all the time. And until that guy's found, I think tag team wrestling is going to be secondary, you know, if not further down the ladder. Because I think tag team wrestling can draw. I think there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. There were people that paid to see matches between, you know, the Hardys versus Edge and Christian, the Hardys versus Edge and Christian, the Dudleys. All the tag teams during that time did really well for themselves. And I know people go back all the time, and I hear this almost every day about how the TLC was like the greatest match people have seen. You know, and looking back at it, it was a hell of a spectacle, and it was very different because there's never been anything done like that on that WWE platform before. And I think, you know, if there's a boom in wrestling again and it becomes hot, and who knows what character will create it or why it will happen, I'm sure it will be something that they stumble upon. You know, if business, they feel like they're comfortable and things are selling out or their numbers are as high as they can possibly be on TV and pay-per-view, I think, you know, they can kind of go on cruise control a little bit and then, you know, devote a little bit of time to tag team wrestling. I think that's what it's going to take to really see a lot of emphasis on the tag team division.
What's your status with Ring of Honor? Obviously, you are having a successful run, having a good program with Adam Cole. Are you under a long-term contract with them right now?
No, I'm not. I'm not under contract with Ring of Honor, but I have carved out many, many dates going forward in the future, and what I'm doing in Ring of Honor will go past this Adam Cole thing. At the pay-per-view, there was a big story that kind of developed, where I joined Steve Corino, who's an old friend of mine who used to work with me in Omega back in the day, and, you know, it was kind of like the guys retaliating against Ring of Honor that were part of the Scum faction. So I think going forward, that's going to be one of the angles, and I think they have an interesting, unique spin on it. The guy who does the booking for Ring of Honor right now is Hunter Johnson, Delirious, and it's been nice to chat with him, and I really appreciate the mindset he's on as far as booking and going forward and trying to offer a very sophisticated wrestling product, and I think they have some good stuff in mind, and I think over the course of the next few months it's going to be really interesting to see how it develops, and I think there's some really good stuff ahead. And even a lot of the feedback I got from the iPay-per-view that was last Saturday night, it was extremely positive, one of the best Ring of Honor's had in a while, and I think Ring of Honor's a great company with a lot of really, really talented guys. Like, it's amazing. I love to sit back and just watch these guys do their thing. You know, their athleticism's off the chart. Kind of makes me, you know, jealous of their youth and their health. You know, but it's so cool to work with them, and it's a very fun spot for me, and I feel like I can really thrive in what I'm doing now. And on top of that, I just enjoy it personally, so it's a lot of fun. So it's Matt Hardy and Ring of Honor are definitely going to be together for the foreseeable future, so make sure to keep tuning in every weekend.
That's awesome, and I, you know, so many people, the general wrestling fans really love WWE. There's a fan base for TNA, and it's obviously there's a fan base for Ring of Honor, and yet on the big scale, obviously WWE is the king. They got WrestleMania coming up, obviously. But I think a lot of people forget that a lot of the stars we see today, the top stars we see today, came from Ring of Honor, and they emerged from the Ring of Honor ring. I think of CM Punk and Daniel Bryan, and Austin Aries was just the TNA champion, and Samoa Joe, and you know, they got their break in Ring of Honor, and obviously Ring of Honor is very much athletic, emphasis on entertaining in the ring, the athletic ability of the wrestler. So I think a lot of people, if they're getting kind of frustrated with WWE or TNA, that is an alternative product out there. And I guess the problem, Matt, I think for a lot of the Ring of Honor wannabes or could-bes would be exposure. And obviously they're on Sinclair now. But I know, like in my area, there's no Sinclair. So it's you know, watching the shows on either the internet through the Ring of Honor website or ordering an iPay-per-view. So I guess, you know, going forward with Ring of Honor in the future, I guess they need to grow in some capacity. I think they need to obviously expand Sinclair. And Sinclair is adding more channels in different markets. But I guess ultimately, Matt, the question would be, what does Ring of Honor really need to do maybe to click with a WWE fan or a TNA fan or maybe a fan in general who's kind of been pushed aside? I know after WCW failed, ECW went under, there was a lot of wrestling fans that just kind of gave up on wrestling. We saw the ratings over the last decade have gone down. What does Ring of Honor really need to do to maybe click with the everyday wrestling fan?
Well, I think Ring of Honor is making some strides to go in that direction, which are correct. And one is that they're still staying focused on the in-ring athleticism and the quality of the matches and making sure they are really strong, athletic, well-worked matches between two really good athletes. But I think they're also trying to, kind of extend, their roster bid to add more names that do have some mainstream value. Like, I know when World's Greatest Tag Team was there in the first place, some of the Ring of Honor diehard fan base gave them a hard time, and I think people have really been into Charlie Haas recently. And it's funny because, I'm at Ring of Honor, and I've been very blessed to have all that TV exposure that I've had in the past. And, people do know me for what it's worth. I'm pretty globally known as far as being Matt Hart. One of the guys who was on the Hardy Boys was on WWE TV for so long and did so many cool things. But when I'm there, the Ring of Honor fan base, they look at me as a WWE guy and, as a guy who, had it on and, made mistakes or whatever. So, they give me a hard time, which is perfect ammunition for my character as a bad guy on that program. And, as much as those Ring of Honor fan base people, might dislike my presence being there in some ways, also I bring a bunch of people, that are my diehard loyal fans. And, they come and they tune in to Ring of Honor now. I read stuff on Twitter where I've never heard of this or seen this before, but now I'm checking it out because you're on and I really enjoy it. And my goal while being there is I hope while someone watches a Ring of Honor and tuned in initially because of me, they see an Adam Cole or they see a Kevin Steen or an Eddie Edwards or Davey Richards or whoever the talent might be from Ring of Honor. I go, wow, I like this guy too, and they become a fan of him. And, in my mind, that's the whole story of what promoting is all about and using talent that has name value and has exposure, because you have your young guys that are kind of your building blocks for a company, and you bring in these guys that do have national exposure, and you kind of work them together, and you put new eyeballs on them, and that's why I hope to be there, to help them get exposure, because the more wrestling companies that can be out there, the more quality places to work that can be out there, it's better for all the wrestlers, and it's better for the business and the industry as a whole. And if I can do something to contribute in that, then I actually feel good about it as well. And at the same time, I'm enjoying myself and having a good time with doing what I'm doing without having to work 300 days a year.
Absolutely. So I was telling Matt offline, I don't know how you guys, worked that WWE schedule back in the day where, you're pretty much on the road almost every day. You're on an airplane, trying to eat right on the road. And now, obviously, you have a easier schedule, which is good, definitely, for your body as well. We're getting a lot of questions about your girlfriend, Rebe Sky. And is there any chance we might see her in Ring of Honor somewhere down the line?
Yeah, I would say there's a chance of that for sure. Myself and Rebe Sky, we're very tight. And we where one of us goes, the other one usually goes. So, yeah, I would definitely not rule that out.
What's your current relationship with Jeff, your brother, and what was your thoughts on Jeff just recently winning the TNA Championship?
I mean, our relationship is the same as always. We're tight as ever. I mean, we're, you know, besides being brothers, we're also best friends. And you know, I was glad to see him win the title. I think it was a good move for TNA. I really don't think there's any question about it. And I feel like I might be partial because we're blood and we're family. But I mean, Jeff's popularity and his reach to a general audience is huge. I think he's the best guy they can use currently as the champion as far as trying to get more exposure for themselves. You know, the stuff he did with Austin Aries, I think was great for Austin Aries because he is a very talented guy, and it was very great exposure. It was a great rub for him at the same time, and he did very good while he was the champ. You know, he really stepped up kind of out of the blue, not being a guy that's had a lot of mainstream exposure at some point on one of the, you know, places that have national cable television right now. You know, he did a good job, and I thought even working with Jeff helped solidify that. But Jeff has just done great. He's in the best place I've seen him personally in his entire life, and I think a lot of that has to do with him, you know, being a dad now. He has a daughter that's 2 years old, and also, you know, both Jeff and I, we've just had an interesting life, just because we've done things that were so great, and we pretty much from when we were teenagers, we stepped into the wrestling business and done it, and we've had ups, we've had downs, and I think now we both really appreciate the actual life aspect of life more than ever before. And, you know, both of us are just kind of shooting to be healthy and happy, and I just think he has all his focus in the right place now. I mean, because Jeff went from really, truly being one of the most unpredictable, enigmatic people, almost like his characters on TV, that I know, to being the most responsible person I know. You know, so he's doing great all the way around, and I'm so proud, so happy for him, and I'm glad he's doing a gig that he's enjoying as well. He's just very happy in life now.
I don't know if you get this question very often, but how's your niece doing?
She's doing great. Really, really good. She definitely has lots of love from all sides, and everybody loves her, and it's fun. You can definitely tell she's Jeff's daughter. She's very charismatic. She's all over the place, and she has no fear and a lot of personality, so she definitely there's no doubt about it. She's definitely Jeff's daughter.
Jeff recently announced that he was going to stay with TNA, re-sign with the company. Any thoughts on did he ever come to you and maybe ask your opinion, or just in kind of in general, what were your thoughts on Jeff re-signing with TNA? Because I think there's definitely a fan base out there would kind of like to see you and your brother maybe one day going back to WWE. Just thoughts on Jeff re-signing with TNA.
You know, yeah, he did speak to me about this before, and I know he was juggling some different thoughts around it. And initially, his big thing is he wanted to take time off, and I think that was kind of worked out when the appropriate time comes. But I think it just got to a point where TNA realized Jeff, you know, Jeff has been very smart with his money as well, and you know, Jeff doesn't have to work right now if he doesn't want to. You know, we've both been very blessed and lucky to be in that situation. But, you know, Jeff, I think, you know, had given out the vibe that he knew that he's kind of done everything he wants to do in wrestling, and TNA was aware of that, and they made him an initial offer, and he was willing to take time off, and I think the offer just kept getting better, and it had less days involved in it, and then, you know, probably more money, less days, more money, less days, and then it just got to the point where Jeff's like, wow, I really can't turn this down, especially thinking about, you know, now that I have a family, and I want to take care of my family first and foremost. So I think he's got a really, really good deal, and it's going to allow him to keep up the schedule and allow him to have plenty of family time, and I think that's what he was looking for. So, you know, man, once again, like I said, I just think about things now not really as much as like a wrestler being in the ground, like, you know, I got to achieve this, I got to achieve that. I don't really have an end game. I just think about kind of living day to day and being happy and being healthy, and I think Jeff is doing that as well. So I think this decision worked out for him well, where he's happy and he's healthy, so good for him, and I'm happy for him. If he's happy, I'm happy. And you were saying, as far as the WWE thing goes, about us possibly being together there at some point, I definitely think that's something that down the road I wouldn't rule out, even if it was like a Hall of Fame deal or whatever. And it's just like this business changes so rapidly and so drastically, and you know, one thing that's great about this business is you can never say never about anything, so anything can happen in it, and surprises are what make it so great. So, so you know, that's something I wouldn't rule out. I just think we have such a great history there, and I'm so confident in where we're both at personally that, you know, I would definitely never rule that out at some point down the road.
I know a lot of people would pop for you guys going to back to WWE and have a reunion at some point. But I guess what – obviously, Jeff is staying with TNA, and, of course, you had a relationship with TNA in 2011. Just wondered if you have a – you keep in contact with them. Is there a chance that maybe we could see the Hardy Boys back together in TNA?
Yeah, I've surprisingly been in touch with all kinds of people, and like I said, one thing that's actually fun about what I'm doing right now is, like, as far as what I end up doing, you can just never say never with, you know, with me right now. You know, one thing I can tell you is that I have no desire to work a full-time schedule anywhere. I'd be afraid that my body couldn't handle it. And when I said, like, you know, I kind of made a promise to myself that I am going to be retired from that schedule because I don't want to put myself in a situation where I compromise what I'm doing, and I don't want to be beat up. I'm already going to be beat up and banged up enough when I'm older. I'm going to try and, you know, slow down and save my body as much as possible now. So, you know, if I could work out something that was like a part-time deal, you know, with a company that was on TV and you know, it made me happy and everyone was cool with it, then, you know, that might be something I would look into in the future. So, who knows, man? Never say never. Wrestling's exciting. You never know what's going to happen.
I wonder if you had any regrets about the style that you were, because I remember, you know, back in your heyday with the TLC, people would say, you know, they got to slow down. They can't keep doing that. Their bodies can't keep up with that. They're going to be all banged up. You kind of in reflection, do you have any regrets on the style that you worked at that time?
You know, that's a good question. It's a good point, because there is a part of me now that looks back and go, wow, I wish I would have done things differently, especially like maybe on live events. You know, if we were doing table matches every night, I wouldn't have taken a crazy bump, you know, four nights a week, over the top through a table or whatever it may have been, or, you know, a ladder match on the road. You know, but looking back too, with that being said, like the times I did that on TV or pay-per-view where everyone saw it, or even if I did do it in a live event and someone became a fan of mine because they saw me perform like that, you know, it's hard to say, like, I want to change that because, you know, at that point you might change your entire history. And, you know, what's done is done, and I've just kind of accepted that. My body is damaged as it is now, and I just have taken it upon myself to, like, you know, do whatever I have to do to make it as healthy as possible now. You know, like I said, I had those non-invasive procedures done, and then, you know, I wanted to get this DDP yoga, and I just, you know, training and working out and doing cardio is something that's going to be with me for the rest of my life, and I enjoy that stuff, and I like it, but, you know, my goal now is just to keep myself as healthy as possible. And looking back, if I could have changed some stuff, maybe on like live events or events that didn't have as much exposure as other things, I probably would now. But also saying that, like, if I would have changed so much of that stuff, would that have totally changed the effect that, you know, myself and Jeff would have had on the business? If we would have changed our styles, you know, so I don't know. It's there's definitely two strong sides to it. You know, I learned in time about how to still work hard but also work smart. So at least I have that now.
You were just talking about, you know, possibly going back to WWE for a Hall of Fame situation. Now, obviously, you're not done. You're still active. Jeff is still active. But I guess at this point in your career, you start maybe thinking about your legacy and kind of reflecting back on your career. Obviously, getting a WWE Hall of Fame would be a big honor for you. But I guess just reflecting on your career, what do you feel like your legacy really would be? You know, when people remember Matt Hardy, what do you want them to remember you? Do you want to remember you for the TLC? Do you want to remember you as a great tag team wrestler, a great individual performer? What do you feel like your legacy is in this business?
I feel like what it's going to be more than anything else is just that, you know, we wrestled a different style that opened it up for smaller guys, especially smaller guys that were tag teams at that point, to do different things and actually be an attraction by being different and being unique, even from, I think, what we were wearing to what our personas were at the time. You know, like when we first wore those Kipwear pants and, you know, those tight T. Riley shirts, it was crazy how the fad went insane about, you know, people on indie shows started dressing like the Hardys, you know, and like anybody could be a wrestler almost in some ways. It was frustrating, I'm sure, to a lot of promoters and other wrestlers out there, you know, because you just had anybody that could, you know, go down to the store and buy a pair of Kickwear pants and a tight shirt and boom, I'm a wrestler now. I have gear just like these WWE tag team champions, the Hardy Boys. But I think our legacy was like we were two guys who came from a very small area, and we made it to the WWE, and we did things that were different and innovative, and I think we helped accelerate the whole process behind where wrestling is today, where you know, you don't see guys that are big or lumbering, you know, they're 6'8", 500 pounds in the ring regularly. The size of the professional wrestler has got so much smaller over time because wrestling fans have gotten smart. A lot of it happened because of the Attitude Era. Not only to be a star nowadays, you don't only have to look good and have a good persona, a good personality. You also have to actually be athletic, and you have to be talented. You have to be able to do things in the ring and perform at a certain level. You know, if you look back to the 80s, a lot of the wrestlers were bigger, more lumbering guys. The match athleticism wasn't that great. The work rate wasn't that great in the ring. You know, Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart, they were the first guys that really opened it up. You know, Ric Flair was still the forefather of it because, you know, he had a limited arsenal that he did, but he was still a smaller guy that wasn't a monster that was like, you know, a marquee guy, especially compared to like Hulk Hogan because he was much bigger. You know, but then Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart broke barriers. And then I think when the Attitude Era came along and myself, Jeff, Edge, Christian, there were so many smaller guys that really kicked in the door and they said, you know what, for wrestlers in the future to be successful and to be guys, they don't have to be bigger, they just have to be athletes and they have to wrestle a certain style or quality of match that's entertaining to the viewer now because our viewer is a lot more sophisticated and it's a lot more it's a lot more of an intellectual audience that we're performing in front of. And, you know, I walk in the Ring of Honor locker room, and this is crazy to me, and I joke about this with Jeff all the time. When we went in WWE locker rooms when we were doing jobs, you know, in 93, 94, we were always the smallest guys. We're both 6'1". We were always the smallest guys. I walk around the Ring of Honor locker room, I'm like the tallest guy there now, which is crazy. You know, it's insane. You know, the wrestler has gotten so much smaller over time, and that's because you know, you have to be a good athlete. You don't see a lot of guys come out that are 6'8", 6'9", 6'10", like an Undertaker, and become a huge star now, you know, because like a lot of guys can't have the athleticism of an Undertaker or perform a solid match like the Undertaker could because he's that good of an athlete.
You know, I got to ask you this because I'm getting bombarded with this question with Twitter and Facebook here. People want to know if the 2005 love triangle with Edge and Lita, was that a work?
No, it wasn't. I mean, it obviously started real. It was highly exaggerated on TV, like extremely exaggerated on TV. But no, you know, it was a tough situation, but it was also, you know, very captivating and engaging to watch for sure. So, not at all.
Do you have any relationship with those two today?
Yeah, I'm friends with Adam. We actually communicate pretty often. And, you know, as far as relationship-wise, everyone's moved on, so not really on that front.
Okay, fair enough. What's your thought on Raw expanding to 3 hours every week?
You know, I understand why they did it. You know, it's a show that still draws great ratings, even though they're down from where they were in the heyday, obviously. You know, and I think they were probably offered, you know, they probably saw dollar signs when they saw this expansion and another hour or more advertisement money from the station, whatever it may be. And I think in some ways it's good for the company, obviously, because they're making more money. It gives guys a chance to have more exposure on TV. But with that same thing being said, I think they're still kind of at a point where they haven't developed quite enough stars or, you know, it's hard for them to fill that 3 hours of TV and really be engaging every week. You know, I DVR Raw every week. I try and watch it every chance I get. And sometimes they do some stuff really, really good. And, you know, sometimes it just kind of lulls, I think. 3 hours is a long time. It felt like to me 2 hours was a much more, you know, action-packed, bam, this is a show. And, like, the whole while you're captivated throughout those 2 hours. 3 hours, I think, starts to drag for a lot of viewers. And I think that was evident when, you know, the ratings came back. And it's one of those things. Maybe it's a work in you know, progress for those guys. Their goal is to, you know, to get to where, you know, viewers are accustomed to those whole 3 hours, but it's going to be a little tougher. And I think, you know, they just, once again, they're going to have to experiment with things. And WWE, as much as people get on them about, oh, well, they should do this, they should do that, they should do whatever, they do an amazing job, and they do a great job at putting together a quality wrestling program. They're the best there is at what they do. I think, you know, as times change, companies have to evolve, and their formats have to evolve in their shows, and I think they're still trying to figure out what is going to work for them for 3 hours to keep viewers engaged and enthralled in their product the whole while.
You talk about DVRing the WWE product. Do you also watch a TNA product? And if you do, what's your current thought on their product right now?
Yeah, I DVR it as well, and that's where I'm you know, make sure to know what Jeff's doing every week. I definitely want to watch his segment. If I don't have a lot of time, I definitely want to watch whatever he's doing. But I have a lot of friends that still work there, and I think TNA is doing a good job with a lot of things. They have a lot of extremely talented guys. I mean, their roster is really, really strong. You know, I mean, there's some things that TNA does that I disagree with. You know, there's some things WWE do that I disagree with. You know, but that's going to be personal preference in some ways. You know, I think both WWE and TNA have to realize that there's so much information accessible for all of the wrestling viewers right now, the wrestling audience. I mean, man, you know more than anybody else. You have a major website, and you know if wrestling fans want to go online and they want to kind of find out the behind the scenes info or you know spoilers or whatever, it's just so easy to find out. It's so easy to understand what's going on with the business, and I think to keep the product interesting and you know like. To keep cliffhangers going on, you really have to be extremely creative, and you also have to treat the viewers. They're very sophisticated and intellectual. And, you know, sometimes in the past, wrestling had just kind of been like a product that was, you know, either geared towards kids or, you know, maybe, you know, people that weren't as intelligent and they figured they could get away with things. And I think wrestling now competes with not just like TNA versus a WWE quality of programming. I mean, I think they compete with shows like The Walking Dead or Breaking Bad. There's so much great television out there now, and it's so sophisticated. And I think wrestling has to continue to get more sophisticated. I think their angles, their stories, it can't insult people's intelligence. And, you know, sometimes that happens. You know, I think when you have a group of people like the Aces and Eights that are coming out every week beating up the good guys, the TNA guys, and their outlaws, like, why wouldn't all the TNA locker room come out every time? Why would that happen? Why wouldn't it stop? You know, that'll probably be one of the issues that, you know, I want to be on top of with this whole scum thing going forwards in Ring of Honor, because I don't want to feel like whatever you're doing and the product you're putting out is insulting the intelligence of your audience, because your audience now is intelligent. Ring of Honor fans are extremely intelligent, you know, but even your WWE fans and your TNA fans are intelligent because there's so much information accessible at their fingertips now.
I remember that was a criticism of the NWO angle, you know, these three or four guys trying to invade the company. Why wouldn't the WCW guys just team up and beat the hell out of them?
You know what? And that's the time where, you know, even like people were, you know, that's when really I would say the internet started breaking out as far as like, you know, you could kind of find out anything that was happening at that time. And it was just starting to become easy for people. And yeah, you're right. And I think they might could have gotten away with it then. But now, like, as time goes further along, I just think, you know, if people look at something that happens on TV and they go, well, this doesn't make sense. Why wouldn't they do this? And if someone has to have that question in their mind, if whoever is putting this together from a booking standpoint doesn't take that into consideration, I feel like, personally, you're insulting your audience's intelligence.
I totally agree with you. I wonder what the difference in management styles is from WWE to TNA, the creative process, how things work backstage. Just can you compare the management styles of the two companies?
I mean, to begin with, you've got Vince McMahon and you've got those people that have been in the business, it feels like eternity, you know. So they definitely have a lot more experience, and they probably, if they come into like a unique situation with how to handle stuff, they probably have a better grasp on how to deal with it correctly than probably a TNA would. I mean, you have a lot of great minds. You have a lot of people that are, you know, influential to wrestling now still down at TNA, but, you know, no one compares to like, you know, Vince McMahon and the way they run stuff. You know, regardless, I've seen times where Vince McMahon has been the most brilliant genius ever, and then I've seen him, you know, make decisions or do things that just make him seem, you know, like a crazy man, you know. But he is, man. He's brilliant when it comes down to doing wrestling. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I mean, the WWE wouldn't be where it is right now. The whole professional wrestling industry wouldn't be where it is now if it wasn't for him. And WWE is just so strong. And like you said before, there are other alternatives out there, like a TNA or a Ring of Honor. But when you have a general casual fan and you say wrestling, what they think of is WWE. WWE represents wrestling to a very casual fan or someone who's not a diehard fan of wrestling and doesn't follow the whole industry. And that's a credit to Vince McMahon, you know, because when people think wrestling, they think WWE. And, you know, that's where they're first going to turn to. That just shows how strong that brand is.
What do you think? Obviously, they seem to be transitioning from Vince as the boss to Triple H and Stephanie. What do you kind of think of that transition? How do you think they'll do as the leaders of the company?
Yeah, I mean, from, you know, the friends I've talked to and the people that I've spoken with, that transition is in progress. You know, it's kind of happening, you know, now slowly over time. I think Hunter's going to be really good. I think Hunter's got a great wrestling mind. I think he loves wrestling, probably more than Vince does, you know, because Vince never always liked the wrestling concept. You know, he was like more of an entertainment guy, you know, as opposed to the wrestling thing. You know, he was never even a big fan of the word wrestler in a lot of ways, you know, but he would still, you know, kind of stick to his roots in a lot of ways. And you know, he wanted to make it more of a mainstream entertainment company. I think Hunter is truly a wrestling guy. He loves wrestling. He has a passion for professional wrestling. And I think once Hunter is more of the guy that's calling the shots and running the scene, and he's not really the guy, you know, that is involved in the actual on-screen product. He's the guy that's actually kind of helping create and, you know, make the on-screen product, you know, better and what it is. I think it'll be good. I think he's creative. I think he's passionate. And I think he'll stay true and faithful to pro wrestling and professional wrestling fans. And I think that's a good thing for WWE, because I think they're always going to have the glitz and the glamour and, you know, that this is a larger than life event and show and television programming. But I like the fact that I feel like with Triple H, it's still going to also remain a pro wrestling company at its core, which is cool.
I know you're a very creative person. I just wondered if at any point, would you be interested in maybe working in creative? Would you be interested in working in the behind the scenes in wrestling, you know, kind of when your wrestling career comes to an end?
Yeah. You know, especially the older I get, I definitely have more interest in doing something like that. And, you know, I kind of feel like I'm at that point right now in my career where I still can wrestle as long as it's limited, but I want to give back. I mean, there's a lot of young guys that are extremely talented that I feel like I can help teach or help give new ideas or kind of new perspective to in a lot of ways. And, you know, as I move forward, I also feel like, you know, there's a lot I can contribute to wrestling from a behind-the-scenes standpoint, whether it's from a creative or booking standpoint, you know, just doing stuff different. And once again, I am a wrestling guy. You know, like I am wrestling first, entertainment second. But I think entertainment is important to make it good, especially to make it mainstream and to gain casual fans. So, yeah, as far as doing something behind the scenes, down the road, I would love to, and I feel like that'll probably be something I'm very passionate about going forward.
And then, obviously, you said specifically you don't have an end game in mind or a timetable, but do you kind of just maybe in general say, well, maybe a couple more years, and then maybe I'm going to wind it down, or...
I mean, it has. I mean, it's already, like, you know, like, I'm very accepting of the fact that, you know, my in-ring career is going to be over, you know, before long. I think my thing is now that I think about it, it's like, okay, well, I'll see how healthy I can get. And even now, too, because I do have this, you know, I have a pretty good little gig going on with Ring of Honor. Like, you know, probably the last year and a half, I have trained hard, but I haven't trained like a wrestler who's been on the road full time, and I'm going to start doing more of that. I feel like I just have every other aspect of my life in such good check, and now I kind of have time to be concerned about training and getting my body in the shape it needs to be to be a pro wrestler full time and do that dedication. So, you know, man, if it's 1 year, if it's 1 month, if it's 1 year, if it's 2 months, or you know, I'm just going to go by how my body feels. You know, like if I feel okay and I'm not hurt, then, you know, I'll kind of continue doing what I do as long as I'm enjoying it. You know, but I do know, and I am well aware, like, you know, my full-time days are done, and I don't want those. And I think I can go for a while kind of working as a part-time guy now, because I still am relatively young and on the scale of a regular human being. But, you know, definitely it's almost like dog day, wrestler days, or they add up on you pretty quick. But, you know, it's one of those things. I'm just going to kind of play by ear, you know, however long I feel good, as long as I'm healthy, as long as I'm not hurting, as long as I can function normal in my regular life, I'm not opposed to wrestling and taking a bump here and there. But I'm not going to overdo it, and I'm not going to get in a situation where, you know, I can't get out of bed in the morning, or I'm miserable or in pain all the time. Like, I won't allow that to happen to me ever again.
You're not going to be Ric Flair. You're not going to be wrestling when you're 65, right?
No. I can't promise you.
Now, obviously, sticking just with your in-ring career, your professional side, what's been the biggest regret? Or what's one thing you kind of wish you would have, maybe looking back, I wish I would have done this instead of maybe what I did ultimately?
I mean, the biggest thing would have been just like, you know, when I was like the U.S. champion in WWE, and then I went on to become the ECW champion. Like, my body was hurt so bad at that time, and I continued to push through, and I kept going forward and fighting the grind, and every day, even though it was, you know, an issue, you know, like to try and get out of bed and get going every day, you know, I just mentally decided, like, oh, well, this is like the best of my career. I'm going to do whatever it takes to, you know, write this out, be the new champion, get WrestleMania, wrestle Jeff, there was other stuff in store after that, you know, and I needed to take time off there. I needed time. I probably needed to be off 6 or 8 months to heal up because I was just so beat up. But I was just going to push through, and I was going to do whatever I had to do to make sure I could work and function. And just looking back in hindsight, I, like, became obsessed with, like, my professional career at that time as opposed to thinking about my personal life and my personal health. You know, so looking back in hindsight, you know, it was kind of like when a change started happening, I would say, where it was just like I started making decisions, and my end game was just like, no, be the greatest wrestler you can be, be the greatest wrestler you can be, be the greatest wrestler you can be, and I was willing to make any sacrifice to do it. You know, looking back now, I was like, hold up, you know, even though I play a wrestler on TV, I still do have a real life, and I'm still going to be in this body, you know, for the, you know, remainder of these 67 years I'm alive or whatever, so I just need to, I need to calm down, you know, and looking back now, in hindsight, that would be, you know, what I would change to. We you know, we all learn through experiences, through ups and downs, you know, successes and failures, and you know, I learned something that really stuck with me, and I feel like because I have, you know, actually been in that situation at some point, I can help give back, and who knows, a lot of people really to learn that, you know, to learn the mistakes of their ways, really can usually have to experience it as opposed to just hearing about it, but you know, I feel like I can help others and give insight back, especially without being hypocritical.
I just wonder, do you have a favorite wrestler today? Is there anybody that kind of maybe reminds you of you as at a younger age?
Someone that reminds me of me. It's, you know, it's funny, the whole angle started with Ring of Honor with me and Adam Cole because, you know, the whole mindset was that, you know, I said Adam Cole reminded me of a young Matt Hardy. And it's funny, he's an extremely athletic guy, but he's a very nice guy, he's a sweetheart. And I can see even why that comparison, Jim Cornette made that comparison, even though he's more athletic than I was at that point in his career. But, you know, I don't know if there's anyone that really stands out. It's like, you know, it's like being me, just because I was so driven to succeed in wrestling, I started the whole Omega promotion just so we had another place to wrestle, you know, and I really was hands-on across the board on that. As far as one person that really stands out as being like me, I don't know if I know that. I'll tell you one thing I really like. I'm a huge fan of Delirious' mind right now with what he's doing with the book of Ring of Honor, and I think a lot of things he ends up coming up with reminds me of my thought process. It's quite similar in a lot of ways. As far as like one active wrestler competitor in the WWE TNA Ring of Honor, nothing really stands out as far as like, oh, well, I see why this guy, you know, it's like me because of so-and-so and so-and-so. No one really stands out, but I mean, there's probably a lot of guys, you know, that have like bits and pieces of either my passion or my mindset or, you know, my mental process or, you know, my drive to be the best they can be.
Yeah, my Twitter's blowing up as we do this interview. They want to know if you have any relationship with Michael P.S. Hayes or Terry these days.
Once in a while, Michael's still a sweetheart, and Michael Hayes taught me more than anyone else has in the wrestling business. I mean, I feel like he is responsible for really giving me the knowledge to kind of help put Jeff and I over the top. You know, especially when I was kind of the shot caller for the Hardy Boys back in the day, you know, and then, you know, occasionally, you know, I'll hear from him or, you know, speak to him. And, you know, I know my dad talked to him momentarily when, you know, Terry Gordy passed away. I know he loved him. That was his brother. It really was. And you know, he's still a sweetheart. And Michael Hayes, I refer to him as my wrestling daddy, you know, and it's one of those things I really hold a special place for Michael Hayes in my heart. And, he's a good dude. So yeah, we do speak occasionally, you know. So.
And Terry, do you?
Terry, once in a while, I might see her on Twitter, and you know, shoot you know, a tweet back and forth, but that's mainly about it. Not in very close contact.
What do you think, just in general? Obviously, I thought putting Michael P.S. Hayes with you and Jeff was a great idea. I think it could have went further than what it did. And just kind of the thought now on managers, we don't really see a lot of wrestling managers. And, of course, with WCW, they did a lot of valets, and that kind of replaced the traditional wrestling manager. Do you ever see, like, a traditional wrestling manager coming back? And would that be a role that something you would consider as being a manager for somebody?
Possibly. That's funny. I've never really thought of myself in that light. But, I mean, even looking back right now, I think it's very obvious that Zeb Coulter has been a huge asset to Jack Swagger, considering the direction they've chosen. You know, so that's it seems like to me he's been the most legitimate male manager that has really been impactful recently. Michael did great things for us, not only on screen as a manager, but, like, you know, Michael's mom, like I said, I feel like he's really responsible for helping – give us the knowledge we really needed to kind of go to the next level and really become as good as we were then. And Michael still, obviously, he's heavily involved in, you know, the creative processes and booking and stuff in WWE, and he's brilliant. And, you know, I will go on record and say Michael Hayes is absolutely one of the top wrestling minds I've ever dealt with, and he still is in the business. And WWE, Vince McMahon, Triple H, they're very lucky to have Michael Hayes right now. He has an amazing wrestling mind, and his thought process is off the charts. It just really stands out as being special.
A fan wants to hear the layaway story.
The layaway story? It's funny. of all my appearances on indie wrestling, everything's been really good. You know, typically before I do something, especially if it's someone I don't know and never worked before, I usually get a deposit. Most of my money's up front. Actually doing a favor for my buddy, Brad Kane Lodi. And we were doing something up in West Virginia. It was a promoter that I knew from a while back. And we actually got to the show that day. And that night it was myself and Lodi, I want to say, and I don't know if we were supposed to have a singles match or I think we were supposed to have a singles match. And as the show went on, this guy gave me a portion of what he owed me for that evening. And apparently this guy had a couple issues before, like with money, with some of his town that had been in. And the mayor of the city was there in attendance and helped us cap him with the show. It was a big Memorial Day festival at this park, and the mayor had given him the park for free with no rent and a couple other things. The mayor actually made this guy sign a legal letter. He had an attorney drop a legal letter on the spot where this guy had to sign to pay me not what my typical money was, but even more money than that with interest. So this guy only gave me, like, you know, 40% of my money in advance, and then he had to pay me the rest of this money. And he put me on layaway because for weeks after I would get $100, like, you know, for 15 weeks in a row, you know, I got $100. This guy had to pay me more than, you know, he would have typically even paid me anyway. So basically he put me on layaway until he finished paying me off. And he was forced to do that because the mayor there was like, you know, he was a wrestling fan. He helped this guy out a lot, and, like, he got his attorney to come and actually sign legal letters where this guy would make sure I was paid. If not, he was going to be arrested. So it was a pretty interesting story. And the comical way that I actually did a YouTube video on my YouTube page that, you know, this guy put me on layaway just because he kind of had a disastrous show, and I think he was expecting to have more money there, and he didn't have everyone's money in hand. He was very unprofessional as a promoter, but it kind of bit him in the butt when it was all said and done. But it was a funny story looking back.
Yeah, your fans, I just, you know, just getting a lot of questions here from Twitter and Facebook. Your fans know your career very well. Like, you get a lot of interesting questions coming in, and we do appreciate that.
Yeah, man, one thing I can't thank my you know, the people that are my fans, and especially my super, super loyal fans, man. Like, God, they inspire me every day to kind of keep doing what I'm doing because they do keep me motivated, and it's amazing how big of a role they play in, you know, in my motivation to continue to train or stay healthy or wrestle or whatever. You know, I get a lot of motivation, I get a lot of inspiration, I get a lot of ideas from a lot of my fans. They're great, man. I'm so appreciative of them.
That's great. And we'll plug your social media here shortly. Want to know if there's any possibility you might write a book.
Yeah, I actually, there's been times where I've had a couple people that have talked to me about it. I have one good buddy who's a writer who actually wrote the Road Wars book. He actually did Booker's book And I know he certainly wants to write my book, and I'm just writing to, I'll be honest, Steve, I'm probably just waiting for the right time when I feel like I have the right exposure. It'd probably be a national exposure level to put out the book. And, you know, one of the more well-known situations, which, you know, whenever that will be in the foreseeable future, which could be sooner than later. But, yeah, I've been personally writing stuff myself, you know, memoirs, just to kind of keep up with what I was going on. And I'll tell you what, man, I have a hell of a story to say, and the book would be really interesting. It's when we wrote the other book, myself and Jeff, we really did it because of our popularity, and they knew it would sell. We had a good story up to that point, but oh my God, Jeff and I feel like we've been a vampire. We've lived 1,000 years since then. You know, just like so much has happened, so much has transpired. And also, at some point, I'm going to put out a DVD. Like, Rebbe is also, she built my website from scratch. She's the one who coded it. She edits my video. She is so talented in so many ways. And actually, I want to put together like a DVD story kind of everything. Of my life, my career, and have her do it, and almost put it out like a, you know, the way a WWE DVD would look, you know, very detailed, very well done. And we've talked about doing that as well. And it's going to be a hell of a story, and it will be inspirational and also educational at the same time.
Got one more from Twitter here. Do you believe leaving Ring of Honor for WWE in 2005 is part of the reason you currently have so much heat with the Ring of Honor faithful?
No, not really. I don't. I think the Ring of Honor faithful just, they've decided, like, I am a representation of WWE, and they also go like, hey, why are you coming here hogging up the TV time of all of our young, talented Ring of Honor guys that can do these amazing hot spots? You know, get out of here, old guy. You know, I feel like that's kind of, you know, part of their thing as well. You know, and anything any mistake I may have made, like as far as a personal mistake, you know, they're going to go straight to that and hold that against me, and it just really works out well as far as me being a heel there and being a bad guy there, you know, and it's very fun to play off of. You know, I can take the things I have done in my real life career and the accomplishments I have done, and you know, boast and brag about them, and you know, and they're just so fun to play off of. And the thing that probably makes it so enjoyable for me is that they're so passionate. You know, it's not like they're playing like they don't like me, and they really, the people who don't like me don't like me. You know, so it's like it's hard to find people in wrestling where you have legitimate heat. So it's a very interesting set of circumstances, but it's a fun set of circumstances as a performer to interact with. I think they knew when I first came into Ring of Honor during 2005. Like, obviously I showed up on WWE TV before I made my debut then and wrestled Christopher Daniels. So I think they knew, you know, obviously I was going back to WWE. And it was funny, I came in and I got a big ovation. I got a huge reaction when I wrestled Christopher Daniels in that first match. I beat him. The next match was against Homicide. It was half cheers, half boos, and the people who hated me hated me. And then I'd won those first two matches. The last match against Roderick Strong, they were chanting, die, Matt, die. You know, and it was just, I was as big of a heel as you could possibly be, and they just didn't want to see me leave Ring of Honor being undefeated in that streak. So that was a fun dynamic then, and it's extremely fun now. And this thing that I'm going to be doing with Steve Corino, considering we've been friends forever, I've known Steve forever, this is going to be a lot of fun. I think our chemistry is going to be real good as well.
Yeah, that's one of the beauties of being in the wrestling community. I remember those ECW days, the Paul Heyman ECW days, when somebody was leaving, it was the "you sold out" chant.
Yeah.
And then, of course, when they'd come back, they'd say, you know, welcome back, welcome back. That's one of the things that you still have, like, with Ring of Honor, but, I mean, that's, you don't really have that anymore, like those ECW days where, man, they would just let you have, if they knew you were leaving the company, they just let you have it.
Yeah.
You know?
And once again, but you know, it just shows how great those fans are to that brand. They have so much pride in their brand. And the diehard Ring of Honor fans, I mean, the reason they're on my ass is because they have so much pride for the Ring of Honor brand. Because I feel like they're going, well, why isn't Michael Elgin getting a huge push? Why is Matt Hardy taking Michael Elgin's TV time? Why is he taking Roderick Strong's TV time? Why is he taking Red Dragon's TV time? Why is he taking Adam Cole's TV time? You know, and it's one of those things that I never look at stuff personally. It's been many, many years since I've ever led anything after 2005 when I left WWE and then came back. Like, I mean, since then, nothing has really affected me personally, because I realized, like, you know, someone that doesn't know me that is judging me or making assumptions on me because of what they see on TV or what they read about me, but who doesn't know me personally, you know, that doesn't affect me. But, you know, those fans, they really are super supportive and faithful of those Ring of Honor guys and the Ring of Honor brand. So, you know, I think that's why they feel justified in disliking me so much. And it just works out well because, like, you know, if I can work against these guys and, you know, help them have competitive matches, my casual fans to see them, you know, go, oh, well, I really like this guy, you know, this, you know, I really like this Adam Cole. He's talented. He's interesting. I like his new persona, whatever it may be. So hopefully, you know, some of my fans will become Adam Cole fans after watching this. And then at the same time, the Ring of Honor fans, it just works out such a great, you know, dynamic in the match because they're just so quick to boo me and just have nothing but disdain for me, you know, because I'm taking up their guys' TV time, you know. So it makes a great dynamic for an Adam Cole babyface, Matt Hardy heel.
Let me take a moment to thank the Matt Hardy fans, as you were talking about your fans there a minute ago. I got so many questions, Matt, and it's time to wrap up, and we're gonna invite Matt back for a part two somewhere down the line because we just got so many questions for you. And let me just thank your fans out there because, yeah, great questions. I had so many questions for you, and they're just giving me such great questions as well. And we'll definitely have Matt on again, and we'll talk about some of the issues you want to talk about as well. And, you know, speaking of your fans, Matt, I know as we wrap here, why don't you go ahead and plug your social media? Because obviously you're very interactive with your fans. You do the YouTube clips for your fans. Go ahead and plug your social media and plug anything you want to plug. You know, your website, upcoming appearances
right
that the fans can check you out at.
Yeah, well, the you know, the first thing I'd like to plug is MattHardyBrand.com. It's my website, still relatively new, but it's the place where all the information is reported. I do exclusive blogs there, and you know, my video links are there, and there's new Matt facts there every week now, so it's a really fun place to be. So check that out, MattHardyBrand.com. Check out ShopMattHardy.com, which has all my newest merchandise. It has some ring-worn stuff. It has old stuff. There's pictures there, signed pictures by myself and Jeff. There's some Hardy Boys material there as well. Check out those two places. And then my Twitter is twitter.com/MattHardyBrand, and that's my most fun social media form, I would say. You know, I really enjoy that more than anything else. I have, you know, over 800,000 followers there, and I love interacting with those guys. And I try and read as many of the mentions and the tweets that come through as possible. I can't see them all, obviously, but yeah, I really enjoy interacting with fans there. And I think it's so cool personally how that, you know, people globally, it's so easy for them to get in contact or get a short message to me, a short tweet to me. And I think it's so great how social media has grown like it has. You can check me out youtube.com/MattHardyBrand. Everything's pretty much at Matt Hardy Brand because I am trying to build the Matt Hardy Brand. And this is newer, and I don't use it as much, but I'm going to start using it more. I also have a Facebook account, which to get to that, it's facebook.MattHardyBrand.com.
Awesome. We'll definitely encourage the fans out there, if they're not already following you, to check out your social media, check out your YouTube. And, of course, you know, occasionally we post one of your YouTube clips up at Gerwick.net as well. So we definitely do appreciate your time, Matt. And as we said before, we'll definitely have you back on real soon. And I talk about a number of issues. Like I said, we got so many great issues that your fans want to discuss, and we'll definitely discuss that in, I guess, part two somewhere down the line. And we do appreciate, as I said before, Matt, you're one of our most requested guests. And this time we'll make sure that we don't have about 8-year gap between our interviews. We'll definitely have you back on real soon. And
sounds good.
And we'll definitely talk about what's going on in Matt's world.
You got it. All right. Thanks, Steve. I enjoyed it very much.